Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. They post episodes on Tuesday and Friday mornings, bright and early. The NBA playoffs are coming, so be sure to check it out. You can follow Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
What up? Happy as Foxworth Friday for sure.
Yeah, man. So for people who don't know this, just to let you know the timing of this, we typically record this on Thursday morning and then you get it on Friday. Now, last week, the draft was on Thursday. So you got a podcast on Friday that couldn't really tell you too much about what was going on with the draft. But little did we know, the draft wasn't like really going to be the story. The real story was Aaron Rodgers is fed up. He has had it up to here, wherever here happens to be. He is. Do people still say that? I've had it up to here.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee somebody's still saying that right now. I might pull it back out. I like the old sayings.
Yes.
Catch people off guard with them.
Yeah, man. He has had it up to here. He wants no more parts of the Green Bay Packers and being there. And I just thought about you the whole time it was shaking out just because you talked about this. Your boys, the quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. And
to quote the great Cujo Goody, you think it can't happen to you, then it do.
Yep, they think that they are free of any guff, but then the cuff comes to their door eventually because you are just one of us. You're just a little bit prettier. That's the only difference. It happens to all the quarterbacks. You can't think of one. I listened to you earlier in the week talk about Elway. I guess that's the only one who kind of walked away when he wanted to with 2 championships and then came back and kind of took over the organization. But everybody else, they run you out of town just like they do the linebackers.
Yeah, and I got news for you. They would eventually ran Elway out of town. He just looked around and did a for who, for what sort of situation. It was like, nah, man, ain't no need for me to continue embarking upon this journey. And he went on about his business. But with Rodgers, the more I think about it, though, oh, he knew it could happen to him. Right. Oh, yeah. He knew when they drafted Jordan Love, he knew exactly what time it was because he used to be Jordan Love. Right. Like he looking at him like, oh, yeah, I seen you before. I know what time it is when they bring you in here. And now everybody's trying to figure out what in the world it is that the Packers are going to do. And I keep hearing people talk about how it is that Aaron Rodgers has all the leverage in this. And I'm like, no, he don't. All right. Like, unless he's willing to cut a $20 million check to not go. Right. Like the Packers may ultimately trade him and give him what he wants, but it's not going to be a situation where they do it at the expense of themselves.
To me, this feels like it's whatever you want it to be. Like if you want to say that Aaron Rodgers has the leverage, you can find a way to make that argument. If you want to say the Packers have the leverage, you can find a way to make that argument. It just depends on where you're standing because Aaron Rodgers is not without leverage. His leverage is their Super Bowl. Like they're on the doorstep of the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. They aren't winning a Super Bowl next year with Jordan Love. Their chance of winning Super Bowl rides on Aaron Rodgers showing up or not showing up. Maybe Jordan Love is much more special than I thought he was. If he was, I don't think we'd be having this conversation because Aaron would be gone. Like they wouldn't be talking about this if he was in practice lighting it up because that's what happened with Brett Favre. So I think that's where it lies in the $20 million check. You and I had this conversation during like filming of HQ. That $20 million, like it'll hurt to see it go. But other than that one moment of pain, Aaron Rodgers made over 200 in his life, and he's engaged to an actress going that Tom Brady route, somebody else who got some earning potential. I don't think that the money hurts that much. What would hurt Aaron Rodgers is the potential of never playing football again and having this be the punctuation on a great career. That would hurt to kind of give your Hall of Fame speech and be like, yeah, my last game, we kicked a field goal. And then I was like, I'm through. And then I never played again. Like, that's the only real leverage. I don't think the money is as big a deal as I think you think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, man, I understand he may have made $100 million, but 20 is a significant percentage of whatever it is. Like, and I assure you, there's nobody, and I don't know who Aaron Rodgers listens to. He strikes me as the sort of dude that don't listen to nobody. But I assure you, there's nobody he listens to who's like, it's just $20 million. Ain't nobody saying that, right? And if he's willing to take it to the crib, he can go ahead and take it to the crib. I'm just saying that if I'm the Packers, we go find out if you're willing to take it to the crib. Because, like, yeah, we'd like to get that Super Bowl. But if you give us back $20 million, all right, you know, sometimes life's about trades, especially if you're not going to play for nobody else. Trading him to San Francisco so we could go over there and embarrass them. Are you high? That was never going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing could happen if he ends up in, well, I guess they won't embarrass him in Denver because they won't play him in the playoffs because they will not be making it to the Super Bowl. But you are essentially handing somebody your ring. So that's why I think it matters where you're looking. You keep saying this like the Packers just are completely comfortable with that. Like, the whole reason why anybody shows up to work, aside from the money, is to win a championship. That goes for Gutekunst, that goes for LaFleur, that goes for everybody in that building. And they may never get a chance. People spend 20 plus years in the NFL and never get as close to the Super Bowl as they have the last couple of years. This is their chance. So I think, like, you're dismissing it. To me, it sounds like you're dismissing it as if they just like, fine, go to the crib. We'll take our money and then we'll just figure it out from there. Like, that could hurt.
It can hurt. I'm not really dismissing it as much as I'm going to make him do that. Like, he going to have to show me that he's willing to take it to the crib. Otherwise, I see no reason for us to rush on this. I felt the same way about Deshaun Watson.
So look at it from the other side. Aaron could be looking and saying, they're going to have to do it. Like,
yeah,
they're going to have to do it. They're just going to have to go into the season with a big hole right there. No assets or no players traded in exchange for trading away Aaron Rodgers. They're just going to have to do it. So I guess that's where I come from. It's like, it depends on who you're talking to, because it looks just as scary, if not more scary, from the organization side to me than from Aaron Rodgers' side.
Well, here's my question, and this is something that I think is interesting about this. I've yet to hear anybody offered an informed opinion on what Jordan Love is right now. We don't talk about him at all. They drafted him, and we didn't give him another thought after they made that call to draft him. I have no idea if he's ready to play next year. If they took him in the first round, he better be ready to play next year. Like, I don't know if he necessarily better be ready to play at a championship level, but he better be ready to play next year. And I literally have no idea. I didn't think he was that good in college, but I didn't think Mahomes was that good in college either.
Right. If he's that good, this will be the time when we'll be hearing about how good he is. This suggests to me that he ain't that good. Like, this is the time when those leaks start coming out. And even if they weren't designed by the organization, this is the time when the receivers will be talking to their favorite media guy. The O-line be talking to their favorite media guy. Like, hey, I mean, we'll be all right. Jordan Love kind of, he's showing us something. So that suggests to me that he ain't that good. And part of the reason why I always end up on Aaron's side in this discussion is my own personal player bias. But also, Brian Gutekunst. A name that nobody knew unless you were in the industry a few months ago. He has to be terrified.
Yes.
This is about to be your legacy. Nobody will ever know you for anything other than this. And I saw that Aaron Rodgers, like, compared him to Jerry Krause. No. Jerry Krause won titles on titles on titles. And then there's a little footnote at the bottom. Then he broke up the team. But that's very different from Gutekunst. Gutekunst is going to be, he ran one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history off of the Packers for a guy named Jordan Love. That's going to be his obituary. That's what it's going to say.
Now, here's my counterpoint, though, on if Jordan Love was good, somebody would have told us. How would they know? I don't know if he's at the facility, because we know a lot of guys are not at the facility. Last year, they did not have an offseason. You know Aaron Rodgers ain't giving that dude practice snap the first, right? Because that's the thing I think a lot of people don't understand about being a quarterback who is not the starter. You might as well be over there hanging out with the punter. You're not getting a chance to touch the ball. The quarterbacks say it's because they need every rep. The quarterbacks really ain't letting you get nowhere near the throne. Like, I don't even know if the Packers know what they have in Jordan Love. Because we also aren't hearing people say he's not ready.
So training camp is the only time where you get a shot. Mini camp, training camp, that's the only time where you might get a chance, because they normally go ones versus ones. He would be twos versus twos. So it would be real, like, coaching and real, not game planning necessarily, but it's different when the season starts. Jordan Love is pretending like he's the opposing team's quarterback right once the season starts. He's scout team. So you don't really get to see. He's throwing interceptions on purpose to get the defense's hopes up and to get their confidence high. That's what he's doing. So you don't really know. But I feel like we would have heard something, I think, especially last year. I feel like during that training camp, we might have heard something. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, I'll tell you this too about the Packers. Here's something that's interesting, and I think quite a juxtaposition to say what we got in Baltimore, which is even though they have not said it explicitly, there seems to be an understanding with the Ravens that we have a black quarterback. And so there are things that we are going to do to affirm him and put him in positions to make it as hard as possible for people to question him because we know what the deal is, right? Like we know how things wind up happening. The Green Bay Packers have never had a black starting quarterback. They have black quarterbacks start games, but that's not the same thing, right? Like Brett Hundley playing a couple of games last year is not the same thing as being the starting quarterback. Can you imagine being the black starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers and these are the circumstances under which the job is coming your way, right? Like it was one thing with Rodgers because Rodgers in 08 got that job and then Favre went to the Jets and the Jets were bad and Favre wound up hurt. But it got tricky in 09 when Favre came to the Vikings. And now all of a sudden this became a thing for everybody to have to deal with. What is this going to be for Jordan Love? Again, a dude where even though Aaron Rodgers fell to the 24th pick that year, we thought he was going to be the number one overall pick. Like it wasn't a terrible shock that Aaron Rodgers turned out to be as good as he was. It was a terrible shock that he fell in the draft the way he did. Jordan Love, we were like, damn, y'all really doing this? Like when the Packers took Rodgers, you could be like, okay, I kind of understand where you're coming from here, right? Jordan Love is more like Tommy Maddox when the Broncos did that to Elway.
Why are you going to ruin my Foxworth Friday with this? Like I hadn't even considered the fact that Green Bay, Wisconsin was going to have to not only cope with potentially losing Aaron Rodgers and watching him ball somewhere else because no matter where he goes, he's going to ball. But then they look down on the field. And there's some melanin under center that is going to add a whole nother dynamic to the city that booed the fans that booed Aaron Rodgers and his guys because they wanted to hold hands, right? Didn't they get upset because they wanted to hold hands the national anthem?
That's right. That's right.
They didn't kneel. They didn't say nothing. They just wanted to hold hands. And they was like, boo! Don't touch.
I know they did that in Kansas City too, right? Like, this is the thing though. I don't think that drafting Jordan Love was as terrible a decision at the moment as it was made out to be because Rodgers was slipping. Like, you could go look at the counting stats and they look like they were okay, but he was not the player he had been in previous years. And I don't think that you necessarily assume that a guy at that age is just going to turn it around till they put that fire under his ass. And the next thing you know, he decided I'm going to come out here and be MVP Aaron Rodgers again. And then he did it. And then the Packers are like, damn, what are we going to do? Like I said this the other day, they had to have the resolve to say, no matter what happens in 2020, our quarterback in 2021 is going to be Jordan Love. That's what you say when you take a quarterback in the first round. Not that he's going to be the quarterback this year, but he will be the quarterback next year. And they blew it.
Yeah, you're right about him slipping because I remember being on Get Up and getting all the heat from it when I was like, hey guys, Aaron Rodgers is like mediocre. He's a good counting stats, but like QBR and then in the big moments, like he's not doing the things that we expect. I got ripped for that. Then I got word that Aaron Rodgers didn't like that me and Mike Greenberg was talking that talk on.
Oh,
Get Up.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That got back to me and Mike from somebody. So anyway, then he comes out. So I wasn't surprised necessarily, but then he comes out in balls. And then I changed my tune because what he did, like, yeah, I'm just saying what I see. And maybe you don't like what I see, but I'm saying what I see. Now he's nice. It's a different tune. But how upset is Brian Gutekunst going to be looking back at that fourth down decision 10 years from now? Because if they advance to the Super Bowl and potentially win the Super Bowl, none of this matters. Like, then everybody's like, cool, you played this perfectly, Brian. Now we could do this transition with this big fat ring on our hands. And they didn't do any of that because of that particular play. But to draft Jordan Love, this is where I push back against you a little bit about, like, I understand the logic behind this decision. But where I push back some is how hard it is to win a Super Bowl when you are close, which they were in the NFC Championship. At that moment, you can't expend a first round pick, I would think, on something that's not going to put you over the edge right then or not going to help you immediately.
Well, no, I think that's a fair point, right? I would say, though, they did that with what, like the number 22 pick?
Yeah.
Like, I think the difference between the number 22 pick and the number 32 pick is smaller, like 33, like getting in the second round, is smaller than the difference between the 12th pick and the 22nd pick, for example, right? Like, first round pick is a broad term.
Didn't they trade up, though? Like, they gave up more stuff. But either way, it's my point, and I think there's even a defense, in my mind, the best defense for that is they were a fluke team in the AFC Championship game.
That, which they were.
Yeah. That's the best thing is like Brian Gutekunst, little Goody as I like to call him, was actually kind of looking at the numbers and like, hey, we aren't as close as everyone thinks we are.
Yeah.
This team got lucky and won a bunch of close games and found themselves in a championship game and then got mauled by the 49ers. And he was like, hey, you know what? We got on a hot streak. We really aren't that good. Let's start planning for the future. Then they came back. And you know what? They really were that good after they got Jordan Love. So there's plenty of ways to defend Gutekunst. I think people are coming down on him really hard. And I might be part of those people that are coming down on him a little too hard. But the problem is nobody cares about your thought process. People care about the results. And the result is you got a championship level team that is falling apart at the seams because you drafted a guy that can't help you now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's get back to this Jerry Krause line. He ain't Jerry Krause. And you know why he ain't Jerry Krause?
Because you ain't Michael Jordan.
Number one. And number two, because y'all ain't the Bulls. The Bulls had won 6 championships in 8 years. Y'all ain't won a championship in 10 years. Right? And, you know, I'll stand on the island on this one. Jerry Krause wasn't wrong. Yeah. And what he decided to do with the Bulls. And when you look at it, SB Nation did a very good video about this. The Bulls had some terrible luck. Like, you go look at who the players were that Jerry Krause drafted after Jordan left and go look at how they all turned out. And they turned out to be pretty good. We talk about, like, Jamal Crawford, Tyson Chandler, Ron Artest, a couple of other guys. Like, he actually, like, it's hard to do this and it requires a great deal of luck. Scottie Pippen was finished by the time that they pulled that off. Like, the rationale for doing that is a lot better than people gave it credit for. But again, that is not what was happening in Green Bay. It's not like he was like, all right, Bakhtiari, you out of here now. Davante Adams, you out of here now. They didn't break this thing down for parts. And again, you ain't Michael Jordan. This is a true story here. The person that's involved in this story is probably going to be listed, right? So there was this operation that was getting started, and his cat was in charge of it, and he was trying to get people to come work for it, right? And so at that point, he hollers at my man and is like, yo, I think that me and you can be the Jordan and Pippen of this. To which my man replied, and who the f*** is Pippen? He was like, yo, like, I might be Pippen, but you ain't Jordan. Right? Like, you imagine, like, that is actually the most low-key shade anybody can hit you. Me and you could be the Jordan and Pippen of this. What?
Anyone who's ever saying that, they never think of themselves as Pip. And it's no disrespect. I know that Scotty takes offense to when people call other people Pippen as shade. I don't mean it as shade, but if anyone ever tells you we can be the Jordan and Pippen of this, they mean it as shade. Like, no one is telling you. No one's like, hey, we could be the Batman and Robin of this thing. I want to be Robin. Nobody wants to be Robin. They all think you are Pippen.
But even if it's not shade, it is definitely self-aggrandizing, right? Yeah. Like, even if I don't think it's shade to call you Pippen, I am calling myself Jordan.
It's shade. It's relative shade. Like, whether right. You want to call it shade or not, it's all relative. It's like telling somebody, hey, you are the flyest dude in the 8th grade. When you start narrowing it down like that, that is obviously meant to say, well, no. you ain't the flyest in the whole school. Yeah, like, right, it's
but,
the same thing.
But he's saying that you a Hall of Famer. He's saying that you an all-time great. I just happen to be the greatest player of all time.
That's why I mean it's relative. It's like saying Five Guys got a great burger, and you say, hey, that burger is really great, but I am Ruth Chris Steak. Yeah. Like, clearly, if when I said Five Guys burger right now, your mouth started watering. You were like, that sounds good. Then I said Ruth Chris. He was like, ooh, Ain't no five guy. Like, that's they telling you, you five guys. It is not an insult until you take into account that they are suggesting that they are a $200 steak.
Yeah, they're like, nah, I like having more fries than any one person could eat in a sitting. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I mean. But like, all of this with Rodgers is just, he's such an interesting case because he doesn't really kick it like a football player, which is something that a lot of people really like about him. And a lot of people don't like about him. And we know enough about him to know that we don't know anything about him. He's the 6'2 guy who gets tired of people telling him, hey, I thought you would be taller than this. You know what I'm saying? Like, did you ever see that on 60 Minutes? Yeah. They did a 60 Minutes feature with him and somebody came up and was just like, I wonder if 60 Minutes told somebody to come do this. Because it just was the look on his face when the guy said that was just like,
I mean, he takes slights. He's one of those guys. But let's get back for 1 second. I just want to get back to Lil Goody. Lil Goody has done a really great job, honestly. Like, he hired LaFleur, which seems like a good hire. They've built up the talent on that defense, even if the defense hasn't necessarily prevailed. Like, he went and started getting free agents, something that they don't do in Green Bay. And that defense, by name, is out of his control, but by name and talent level, I thought it was good. Had the best offensive line in the league. I mean, Devontae, he didn't draft, but I mean, he was there at the organization when they brought him in. Like, it's hard to argue against any of the decisions that he made. And I'm even fine with them not getting him first round receivers because it's not like they aren't finding suitable weapons. Like, Devontae right. Adams balls anywhere. Maybe not all those other guys, but Devontae Adams is a true number one. That's all any quarterback really wants, a true number one, a reliable left tackle. If you can't play with that, I'm sorry.
Yo, let me ask you this. Pick a number between 1 and 10.
7.
I am going to look up the 2017 NFL draft. And the reason I'm going to do this is the whole thing about no one took a wide receiver in the first round. Let's go look at who some of these first round receivers might have been. All right, so 2017. Corey Davis hadn't really worked. Mike Williams, it works when it works. John Ross, those were the receivers in the first round. Like, are we mad at the Packers for not going to get those guys? You know what I'm saying? Then the next ones were Zay Jones, Curtis Samuel, and Juju. Like, is that what we're talking about here? That's the part where people are like, they haven't taken this in the first round. All right, I feel you, but who were the people that we were talking about at the time when it came around? Like, they took all those defensive players. This is the unfortunate thing for Aaron Rodgers. Because we have Aaron Rodgers, we kind of need to go get defensive guys, right? Because if we stuck Aaron Rodgers out there with no defense, you would be talking about how it is that we ain't give Aaron Rodgers no defense. Like, it's really hard to win as the front office man when you have that quarterback, because no matter what you don't take is what people are going to talk about, period.
The knock against young Goody and his lack of first round, or just the Packers and their lack of drafting first round receivers. It's also unfair if you look at the receivers who dominate the league, they aren't first round guys. And then you look at the highest bust percentage by position, it's receiver. Like, if you gauge that by who signs a second deal with the team that drafted them, like, the receivers do that less than anybody else. So, like, from a strategic standpoint, I'm surprised that we don't have the analytics crew out here defending Gutekunst, because it makes sense. You can find a top of the league receiver in the second, third round, and you are more likely to draft a dud in the first round.
Because very little of the way that people talk about this Aaron Rodgers situation is based in anything close to logic. That's not what this is. And again, I think you and I have talked about this. People generally feel like everybody's out here underestimating them. Right? Like, we talked about this before. Your teacher told you that you wasn't going to turn out to be nothing. Why? Why did she say that? She ain't say that to everybody.
Yeah, because you were displaying the characteristics of a person who is going to be a deadbeat. That's on you, not on her.
You was looking like a do-nothing, right? Like, this is the thing that happened. And so with Rodgers, now this thing has happened. Somebody said you couldn't do it. And then you went out here and did it. Like, people themselves feel like they are the Aaron Rodgers in this. As somebody who has been in a position where you'd be like, yo, man, we need to do better than this. Again, they got it wrong. Aaron Rodgers came and turned that thing up. Like, even Tom Brady to a degree this year, it was slipping. It's just that he is Tom Brady. Like, when people are like, I mean, it's clear that Belichick couldn't win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady. Yes, he did. He won 2 or 3 without Tom Brady. It just happened that their quarterback was Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that 2001 Super Bowl. That ain't the Tom Brady that we talk about. He won a Super Bowl with that.
That Atlanta Super Bowl? Now, that's one that wasn't nobody out there going to win without Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady was special at that moment.
But they got a helping hand from the other team. They won the Super Bowl against the Rams 10-3.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah.
Hell out of that.
Right, but once you become that guy.
Flores won that Super Bowl.
Yes, he did, right? But once you become that guy and people see that, and quarterbacks are so scarce, I get this. Nobody can understand the idea that we're going to move on to another quarterback. The Packers made the right decision when they did that with Aaron Rodgers moving on from Brett Favre, even if it looked dicey for a couple of years. Because remember, 08 was the year that Favre went to the Jets. 09 is when the Vikings did their thing with Favre and everybody was all nervous. What happened in 2010? Packers won a Super Bowl.
It's the right call.
It was the right call, you know? And sometimes you got to make these uncomfortable decisions. But if it's your job to make the uncomfortable decision, you got to stand in the truth of that uncomfortable decision. And what Gutekunst could not do was get up after the 2019 season and say, I mean, keep it real, guys. We wasn't really that good. That was the problem, is that you can't come out there and say that, because you can't say it to the dudes on the team. Because they like, yo, a win is a win.
Yeah, this conversation, like, I feel like I'm Team Goody now. Like, all the things that we have come to in this conversation suggest to me that I'm on the wrong side of this debate. Like, all the things that he has done, justifiable, with the exception to me. Oh, no, that's even justifiable. Yeah, I'm switching sides. Lil Goody all the way. I got his mixtapes and everything. He was right.
The counter argument then comes to, and I think this is a fair question to ask, is it about the team or is it about you? Like, do you want to be the guy that says he built this whole thing up? And I don't know why anybody ever feels like that as a general manager, because all they care about is whether or not you win. You know, like Jerry West got all them props as an executive. He didn't draft Magic. He didn't draft Worthy, you know, but we give him the credit for some of those wins that come around with that. Like, as long as you win, nobody cares, especially as a general manager. Nobody really cares how much of that was actually the team you put together.
So what has he done that suggests that he cares?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, yeah, I thought you were making the point that it seems like he cares that he wants the credit.
No, I don't know. But see, that was the thing, though, about Krause, is that people felt like with Krause that, and it is true, he always wanted his credit. Like, if he were the Jerry Krause in the analogy that we point to, it would be that he, because we don't know anything. Part of that is because they in that little bitty town that don't none of us know any of the ins and outs of what's a guan between everybody, you know, that's involved with it. We don't really have any idea. And then we got salty Aaron Rodgers.
Appleton, Wisconsin. I'll never forget it. I've been to a lot of NFL cities to play in NFL games. And we normally stay in a big fancy hotel in the heart of a nice city. Even when we played in Foxborough, we would stay, I guess, in like Rhode Island or somewhere close by that had like a big, nice hotel. We might take a long ride. But when we went to play the Packers, we stayed in Appleton, Wisconsin, in a tiny little hotel that had like two floors all spread out. And it just felt like it was 8 o'clock. We normally go out and eat, have something, hang out with the fellas. Nope, not in Appleton, you not. 8 o'clock. Everybody down. Everybody is down to bed. Nobody's coming out. So you are right. That's a special situation where they can keep their lips tight because ain't nobody there.
Do y'all have hotels in the CBA? Like in the NBA CBA, 5-star hotels are a requirement. And it's a problem in Oklahoma City in particular because there just aren't that many available 5-star hotels. They would have to go build one in order to satisfy the NFL CBA. They'd have to put an asterisk on there. 5-star hotel, if there is one within 100 miles.
Yes, or closest star rating to 5, and you are only getting 3 in Appleton, my dude. That is all they got.
Y'all staying at a hotel that still got smoking rooms.
Oh, you can still smell it in there. They got pets allowed. Oh, yeah. And Appleton, they got all that stuff.
Y'all out here bringing your own sheets.
We got to have shifts for dinner. Like, it was not dinner time for everybody. It's not at 8. Dinner time is 7:30 for the DBs. It's 7:45 for the linebackers. Oh, gosh.
Here's what's wild. Think about this. A little football thing that people haven't thought about. If Aaron Rodgers no longer plays for the Packers, who's the best quarterback in the NFC North?
Justin Fields.
Oh, you just go skip over Kurt. You just go past Kurt. Did you see Robert talking about Kurt?
I loved every second of it.
Oh, my God. And for people who have not seen it, I want you to look it up. But you need to understand the totality.
You got
to
prepare them because they think they're going to go there for a hot take and they're going to get so much more.
Yes, yes. So Robert Griffin was on Bleacher Report's draft show with Adam Lefko. It's Robert Griffin at his crib and his setup. First of all, he got on a black short sleeve button up with sequins on it. It's not all sequins. But it got sequins.
You trying to tell me that's not like some sort of cowboy shirt?
Dallas.
The sequins are Dallas.
Yeah.
The cut of the shirt.
Yeah, yeah. All that's that up there. Up there. Okay, gotcha, up there. Okay. Houston ain't really going for that. So he's got that shirt on. He's got two giant teddy bears behind him. And when I say giant, I mean giant like sitting on the floor up to his eye level.
Can we take a second here for the teddy bears? I'm sorry. I don't want to slow down this whole process. But when we all started doing TV from home, like to some degree, we gave some thought to what our background was going to be. And like I purposely took the books that I wanted to have back there and I purposely picked those things out. So RG3 was like, you know what? I want two big pink teddy bears in my backdrop. That's the message I'm trying to send.
Yes. Okay. And then there's a desk with some trophies on it, right? Like, look, it's rookie year of the trophy on there. But it's definitely, he thought he was going to have a trophy room, and it turned into a corner of his desk that has the trophies. And so he's sitting there, and the Vikings took Kellen Bond, and they asked Robert about it. I don't know. This is not what number 8 wants to see. This is not it. This is a guy that does everything that he can't do. And I'm telling you, Cousins been up there cashing those checks. And now they brought somebody else in.
Cashing those checks, going 8-8. Don't forget that part.
Oh, that's right. 8-8, 9-7. Cashing those checks. That was so shady. And you could see him fighting the smile the whole way. And I'm like, at first, I'm like, dog, this is a third round pick. Like, he ain't really sugar like that. And then Schefter tells us that the Vikings actually were trying to go get Justin Fields, and that they see Kellen Mond as a potential replacement because I have figured this out. And you tell me if I'm wrong here. I saw Bruce Feldman had a quote to indicate this. The NFL basically believes that Jimbo Fisher is terrible. And all these people think that if you get a Jimbo Fisher quarterback, you can take him to the next level because he has been so poorly coached. That's how Christian Ponder goes in the first round. That's how EJ Manuel goes in the first round. That's how you talk yourself into Jameis after all the interceptions and everything else that was around it. Like, teams seem to look at Jimbo's quarterbacks, you know, they all are like, we can fix this, right? And so Kellen Mond, who I saw in college and I did not think was that good, but Bruce Feldman at The Athletic had a good quote from somebody like, Jimbo just coached him to death. And so the Vikings apparently were like, no, we've got a starting quarterback here. And what it tells me, I want to know what you think about this point. A whole lot of these quarterbacks that these announcers be talking themselves into, their teams actually see what the rest of us see when they aren't actually that good. Jimmy Garoppolo, right? All these people try to talk themselves into Jimmy Garoppolo. Clearly, his team doesn't think he's that good. Kirk Cousins, that seems to be what's going on up there because they can't never tell us the quarterback's sorry. They always got to tell us he all right.
Yeah, I think you hit it when you said not that good. That's what they see in their quarterback. It's like, okay, well, it's not that good. They done to go back to the hotels. They're like, all right, we've been staying in 2 stars. So from a distance, that 3 stars seem really nice. Oh, so we don't get no mints on our pillows here? They're like, all right, we're going to upgrade, try to get us a 4 or 5 star. Like, that's what it feels like to me. It's like they thought that life before was terrible when they were living this really terrible life. And they're like, man, I would give anything for mediocre. And then they started playing against teams or losing in important games and realized that, no, there's another level that we're going to have to get to because a quarterback on that next level gives so much like room for error. As a coach or general manager, you can call a wrong play. You can bring in the wrong guys. If your quarterback is nice, then it looks like you have done all those things right.
Yeah, like I always wonder if there's a difference on those things between like how a defensive coach versus an offensive coach sees it. You know what I mean? Because I think the offensive coach can look at these quarterbacks and say to themselves, oh, I can come up with some things to do with him, right? My brain can overcome some of these weaknesses. The defensive coach is like, we would light his ass up. Like, you know how mad Mike Zimmer is that he watches Kirk Cousins play 16, 17 times a year, and not once does he get to call a play? You know what I'm saying?
I think that's a fair point. we always rely on the offensive coaches or offensive guys to do the analysis of the quarterbacks because they know all the buzzwords and they spend a lot of time with quarterbacks. But in actuality, like the defense having to face them, you might be better served have your defensive coordinator watch film on quarterbacks or your DB coach watch film on quarterbacks and come back with that. Because I'm telling you, that's what the stuff that breaks defenses, like it's that ability that we can recognize.
Right. Like I can't do nothing about this, right? I don't think it's a coincidence. Buddy and Rex Ryan, right? Both of them at various points have leaned on a quarterback that could move. Buddy Ryan, of course, is like a pioneer in this. Like, look, I don't know nothing about who Buddy Ryan voted for or his attitudes about the world or whatever it was. He put Randall Cunningham out there in 1986, right? Mm-hmm. Like that damn near make him Branch Rickey. As far as the NFL is concerned, Rex had, he made the call to go to Tyrod when they had that chance in Buffalo and made that move. Pete Carroll, who generally likes his guys super pro style and everything else, he made the call to go with Russell Wilson at a time where I'm not sure that many people would have wound up going with Russell Wilson. But I think that you could look around and find a lot of these quarterbacks who could move, and you will find that defensive guys were the ones who were like, nah, let's go with this, because they looking at, I can't do nothing with that. I don't have a strategy to account for that part.
That's absolutely right, because those other guys have come up in a world where they thought one thing was the way to do it. The defensive guys have not come up in that world. They come up in a world where they go out there on Sunday and they're like, all right, we got something for him. We got something for him. Ooh, what are we supposed to do about that? You know, like the league, the rest of the league has finally come around in the last decade or so. But I can tell you that as a defensive player for much of my life, when I was in college where the athletic quarterbacks were more of a thing, I was like, man, I don't want to play that dude. That's what we always saw that as a problem. And finally, the league has come around to it. And maybe it's because the defensive guys have forced it on them. But it always seems so obvious to me that we would eventually get here. It's like shooting a three in the NBA game where it's like, all right, it's obvious now that we're here that they should have been shooting more threes in the past. But the same thing, like it's always been obvious that why would you just play a man down in the running game? And why would you just rely on, hey, this got to be perfectly schemed, perfectly timed, perfectly read, and perfectly thrown. Otherwise, we got a non-athlete back there hanging out.
Well, what I think it took was, it took colleges and to a lesser degree, high school coaches to start letting the fast quarterbacks actually throw, right? Like developing them as passers. Like Michael Vick threw something like 300-something passes or something like that at Virginia Tech. Like, I mean, and I get why they did it that way. Like, what are we supposed to do with Michael Vick running the option, right? Like, I totally get why it would go that way. But now that these guys actually get some practice throwing the ball, and you know, and you're not going to have to catch them up, because it's not because those guys were incapable. I think they just weren't coached properly, you know, on the way up through this. Man, once you figured out that these cats, you know, now they can throw the ball, you a dummy if you out here. Being slow is not intrinsically positive. And that, to me, the most racist thing about quarterback evaluation is that they was just so down on black folks that being fast was seen as a demerit. Well, you know, those mobile quarterbacks can't. What about being fast means you can't read a defense? Like, explain that part. And if you wanted to explain it like I did, maybe. But none of them could actually do that.
It was a bad day, but I'm happy for it, because it allowed me to have a career in the NFL, because that's a whole nother problem. And I think we talked about this piece that I wrote, Mina and I wrote together, about Lamar Jackson before he came out. And I just broke it down from a defensive perspective in that piece about what having that quarterback does. And honestly, you think about having to double team, it's the same as having to double team a number one receiver, except you don't get the advantage of double teaming a number one receiver. In passing concepts, you have to bring somebody out of coverage in order to account for the fact that Lamar might go 25, might go 80 on you on the ground, which gives you less flexibility in the passing game. And let's say you cover something perfectly. He can buy time if you're in zone, because, man, you can't really play man against those quarterbacks because everyone turns their back to him and it's over. You play zone. You can't necessarily play zone because they'll scramble and then zone turns into man. And then you got a linebacker trying to run with Hollywood. And that doesn't even account for the fact that they build their whole offense around the fact that you have to account for Lamar in the running game. It's mind-blowingly stupid that it took us this long to get here, but we're finally here and the NFL is better off for it.
Except in college, they got it in the late 60s and early 70s, right? The veer and the wishbone are based on the idea that we're going to now make this 11 on 11, that we can leave somebody free because now we're going 11 on 11. That was the whole basis of that. Now, granted, I don't think the wishbone was ever going to work into pros for obvious reasons that would have involved people dying, right? Like, it just wouldn't have gone. But how it was that nobody was thinking to themselves, how do we figure out how to turn this back into 11 on 11? Because the 46 defense, Buddy Ryan, it's all predicated on the idea of, well, we're always a man up, you know? And in the passing game, there's but so much you could do on that, but it really was just based on, wait a minute, we're always a man up, send the house, right? Yeah. But it's just that. Even Kyle Shanahan was talking about what Trey Lance allows him to do. And he was like, yeah, we're now going to make this 11 on 11, which the simplest concept, just like you said, it's like the three-pointer in the NBA. It's a very simple concept, but they were so hell-bent on keeping us out.
It's the best argument you can have for capitalism versus socialism is because the pro game, it's a closed ecosystem and they try to like legislate out any inequity. The college game is different. So when you're in the college game, you got to innovate. You're less talented. And so you're looking for an edge anyway. You're more likely to try something that is unorthodox because you're like, man, we got to find a way. Because everybody on their side is better than everybody on our side. Let's find a way to get an advantage. But the NFL, they're like, nah, if you stink, you still gonna get paid.
Yeah.
If you stink, we're gonna reward you with the number one overall pick. You know what happens in college when you stink? No five stars wanna come play for you. So like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where some teams are gonna die out because they can't compete. Some teams gonna keep getting better, but there will always be innovation at the bottom level because innovation is the only way that they can compete. It's very different in the NFL.
The history of the University of Houston, and I'll just limit it to football because it's a similar thing in basketball, but in football, Houston gave us the veer, Houston gave us the run and shoot, and Houston was ahead of the integration curve for schools of their region. Why? Because that's what they had to do.
It's not because Houston coaches are more benevolent.
They're also at the forefront of cheating because Bill Yeoman, who came up with DeVere, when they finally, NCAA finally came and brought the hammer, the allegation was that he was in the locker room handing out the envelopes by himself. He made sure everybody got paid.
As I said, it's not because they are benevolent, because they are desperate. And, you know what I mean? That's what happened. That's what led to so much change. You yelling at people like, you got to be a good person. You got to do the right thing. Nah, we got to win.
Yes, whatever it takes. Yeah, University of Houston basketball program, the dunk. Like, that was the big thing. Everybody was like, nah, man, I don't know about the dunk. And he's like, what are you talking about? Run faster than everybody else and go dunk. Why? Because I can't come up with nothing better than that. Why would I, by the way?
Playing basketball when I was young, like middle school age playing basketball, I remember how frowned upon shooting the three-point shot was. Like, it felt like even in the NBA in like the early 90s, and especially when on my little rec team, like shooting a three, that was like almost like showboating. But now it's more essential than anything else where it's like, why would you shoot from way out there? Like, you got to get close to the basket. And to me, like, it's sad. I know, like, people listen to this who are young, like, might feel like this sounds ridiculous. I feel like if you watched one of those old 80s games, you would see that they really rarely ever shot the three. And you would also probably hear some commentators being critical of players who pull up every now and then.
Larry Bird used to shoot like 1-3 a game. Legitimately 1-3. And I understand, like, there's lags, right? There's a lag between a change in the paradigm when people recognize it. There's a recognition, decision, action, and impact. Like, these are the lags. There's a lag between a problem existing and a problem being recognized. Then there's a lag between the problem being recognized and the decision of how to handle it. Then the lag between the decision and the action, and the lag between the action and the impact. Like, that's how it goes. And it took us like 40 years, basically, with the three-pointer to come around. It's also worth noting, y'all little dudes couldn't shoot. Y'all ain't need to be out here shooting no damn threes.
Oh, what you talk? Oh yeah, for sure. You're absolutely right. But I guarantee you, if you walk into a gym of eighth graders right now,
yeah,
them little dudes is pulling.
Well, yeah, especially in the gym, like in them courts that ain't got no lines on them. Maybe a little bit of a different story. But our Caucasian brothers figured out very, very quickly. Those cats that came up playing all their games on wood with lines, they also the ones out here talking about let's play ones and twos. No, no, we will not be playing ones and twos. But ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out here on Foxworth Friday. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on First Take. Check him out on Highly Questionable. Where else we gonna check you out at?
The Right Time.
Yeah. Check him out here every Friday. Also, The Right Time Book Club returns on Monday with Joel Anderson. Read up to chapter 12 in Caine Mutiny by Bruce Feldman. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Tony Collette, you handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.